I have three scriptures that I would like to read in the New Testament before we turn to the Old. The first is in Romans, the 15th chapter, verses 4 and 5. Romans, the 15th chapter, and verses 4 and 5. Take the liberty of reading without particular comment, except now, two words in this verse and in the fourth verse as they appear in the Darby translation. Whatsoever things were written aforetime were written for our learning, that we through endurance and encouragement of the Scriptures might have hope. Now the God of endurance and encouragement grant you to be like-minded one toward another according to Christ Jesus. Now let's turn to the 12th chapter of Hebrews. The 12th chapter of Hebrews in verses 2 and 3. In the second verse, it's looking, and in the third verse, it's considering. Hebrews 12 and verse 2. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured. The third is in 1 John, the 5th chapter, and verses 4 and 5. I noted that in the Darby translation, each word of overcome is victory, so we'll read it that way. 1 John 5 and verses 4 and 5. For whatsoever is born of God has the victory over the world. And this is the victory that we have victory over the world, even our faith. Who is he that has victory over the world but he that believeth that Jesus is the Son of God? What I have in my heart is to go back into the Old Testament and take three examples from the story of Joseph and three stories from the incidences of David as an example of having a victory in the midst of adversity. So let's turn to the 37th chapter of Genesis, but with special emphasis or awareness that these two individuals, probably as much or more than anyone else in the Old Testament, are beautiful types of the Lord Jesus. So that's why we read the verses in the 12th chapter of Hebrews. Consider him. Now, in the 37th chapter of Genesis, without reading as much as we would like, he goes to see his brethren, and they conspire in the 18th verse. And when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him to slay him. Well, Reuben seems to have some degree of desire. But now let's read down in the 23rd verse. And it came to pass, when Joseph was come unto his brethren, that they stripped Joseph out of his coat of many colors that was on him, and they took him and cast him into a pit. And the pit was empty, there was no water in it. Now, this particular circumstance, I'm sure that we're not going to experience. But as we go through the three examples of Joseph and the three of David, if we can see that something of them, that we can walk in his footsteps, we can consider him, and we can look unto Jesus. Now, as we go down, we find that Joseph is sold, and we find him now in Egypt, in the 38th chapter, 39th chapter. Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him out of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master in Egypt. We'll see that as we progress to this one and the next one, that all things work together for good to them that love God. And to think of the adversity that each one of us and some that we know of. We've prayed for the parents, the children that are left, and adversity in so many ways, the widow in Bloomington. And so we take from these incidences that encouragement of the Scriptures for endurance and encouragement for you and for me in the wilderness that we're in. Now, we know in the rest of the chapter 39 that Potiphar's wife saw, indeed, without too much explanation of it, in the sixth verse, Joseph was a goodly person and well-favored. Makes us think of the blessed Lord, doesn't it? Here it's more physical. And so she falsely accuses him further down in the chapter, and his employer, if you will, says in the 19th verse, "It came to pass when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And he put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound. And he was there in the prison, but the Lord was with him." To see how the circumstances that Joseph went through, however degrading they were, that he kept God before him, and he was encouraged, and he was, the Lord was with him and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And so for the encouragement of each one of us, that sometimes we wonder just how much we can take and the difficulties. But if we see in this story of Joseph that whether he was in the pit, there was no water in it, what a picture of the blessed Lord, all God's waves and billows passed over him. But for Joseph, he was despised of his brethren because he had told them that of his dream. Well, he maybe didn't understand when that would be fulfilled, and surely when he was in the pit, he certainly didn't. I'm sure he wondered just how it could possibly be fulfilled. And you know, sometimes we take that verse in Romans 8:28, "All things work together for good to them that love God." We say, "I don't understand how it's possible." But you know, it's through endurance and encouragement of the Scriptures. And so, when we're through, we'd like to summarize, and we'll give a little summary of it right now, that the circumstances of David, the circumstances of Joseph may not exactly fit your circumstance or mine, but it's an example of what there is in the ways of God with each one of us. And be encouraged to find throughout Scripture an illustration that just fits, just exactly fits our needs. So now he's in prison. Is he in despair? Well, let's find out. In the 22nd verse, "And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was a doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper." Beautiful. To think of being able to make the circumstances of my life and yours into that which the Lord can use and prosper us, not in basket and store, but in a state of soul. We covet that, don't we? It says to covet earnestly the best gifts, and I'm not sure that's a gift, but it certainly would be a gift down from above in that sense. And so the desire of your heart and mine is to be able to take the circumstances that we're found in, not to get out of them, but to find in them that which God can prosper us in our soul. All right, let's go on. In the 40th chapter, we find that there are two new prisoners, and they have a dream. And he tells the meanings of those dreams. And down in the 14th verse of the 40th chapter, he says, "Think on me when it shall be well with thee, and show kindness, I pray thee, unto me, and make mention of me unto Pharaoh, and bring me out of this house." Let's read quickly after what we've read, the first verse of the 41st chapter. "And it came to pass at the end of 2 full years. It doesn't say about. In the book of Acts, there's several incidences of about 12, about this many thousand. But it says, "It came to pass at the end of 2 full years, Could we say, without too much imagination, that was prolonged waiting, wasn't it? Here he was given everything under the hand of the keeper of the prison. He could tell exactly what was going to happen to those two, and he had to wait 2 years. We'd like it to go like that, wouldn't we? And so we learn patience. Tribulation worketh patience, and patience experience, and experience hope. And hope maketh not ashamed, because the love of God is shed abroad in our hearts. To think of how God, in the desert, God will teach thee what the God that thou hast found. And it's through circumstances, some of which may be pleasant, some of which may not be, but they all work together for good. Well, we know that after 2 full years, Pharaoh has a dream. And he interprets, and he's brought out of the prison. So we've started with Joseph in a pit, and we now are not going to read it, but we find that at the end of this portion that we've taken up, that we find that Joseph now is taken out of prison. He changes his garments. He comes before the Pharaoh, and he's given charge of all of this vast planting and harvesting in preparation for 7 years. Brethren, we may not be called to that kind of thing, but we can see by the endurance and encouragement of Scriptures that we might have hope. So now let's turn to David in 1 Samuel 16. We found Joseph in a pit to start with, and we're going to start with David, 16th chapter and the 11th verse. We're going to find him in the next chapter fighting with the Philistine. But first of all, I'm reading in 1 Samuel 16:11 to pick up a thread of what David's occupation was before he was on the battlefield with Goliath. And I really believe that there's a lesson for me and for you in connection with it. And Samuel said unto Jesse, Are here all thy children? And he said, There remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. Lonely, out in the hills. He probably had three things. He had a staff. He had a harp of some kind. And he had a slingshot. And he had a sense of the presence of God. God in secret thee shall keep. There is no opportunity for any one of us to do a work of God until there has been a work in our souls. It is God that worketh in you both the will and the do of His good pleasure. And so that's 1 Samuel 16:11. Now let's go to the 17th chapter and the 34th verse. We find what happened out in the hills. We have assumed that he had his harp and he played and he had this slingshot. But now notice in 1 Samuel 17:34, And David said unto Saul, Thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear and took a lamb out of the flock. Did he care about the lamb? Well, obviously he did. And I went out after him and smote him and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he rose against me, I caught him by his beard and smote him and slew him. What kind of supernatural strength did this young man have? It wasn't a question of having gone to a health spa to develop muscles and that kind of thing. But it was in God in secret thee shall keep. And I desire it for you. I desire it for myself. To experience in the wilderness that closeness in communion with God in private. So that if there is anything that is done in public, it may be the result of what God has wrought in your soul and mine in private. So let's go on. in the 44th verse of the 17th chapter. And so we must progress. And so we won't read it all. Let's read the 48th verse. And it came to pass when the Philistine arose and came and drew nigh to meet David, and that David hasted and ran towards the army to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took thence a stone and slang it and smote the Philistine in his forehead, that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell upon his face to the ground. See, his statement was, I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. When once we've been with God in secret, everything that's done in public is going to be given credit to the right source. It's going to be given to God. And if there's anything that comes to man, we need to recede back into the shadows. We need to go back into the secret of the presence of God so that what's manifested will be clearly of Him. So now, the first example of David that we've chosen is the background of being a shepherd and of killing Goliath. Let's go on to the next one. It's not a very pleasant one, but let's look at it in a pleasant way. The first two verses of 1 Samuel 22. 1 Samuel 22, verses 1 and 2. David here is no longer the champion in the field, but he's being hunted by Saul. But we don't really find... Well, let's read it. But I want this to be the emphasis. We don't find David lamenting, but he's now a source of encouragement and center for those that are. 1 Samuel 22. David therefore departed thence and escaped to the cave of Adullam. And when his brethren and all his father's house heard it, they went down thither to him. And everyone that was in distress, and everyone that was in debt, and everyone that was discontented, gathered themselves unto him, and he became a captain over them, and there were with him about 400 men. Doesn't tell us that he was discouraged, that later he did say, I shall one day die at the hand of Saul, but not here. But he's a center. He's an encouragement to those that are in debt and discontented. What a beautiful picture. What a beautiful picture of what the Lord does for each of our hearts. And you know, brethren, I'm not looking out at you and saying that you're in debt and discontented and so on. But there may be that element with each one of us that we need the sense of the Lord that brings us together. And we're not brought together because of compatibility. We heard about the two sisters in Philippians. They were placed by God in that assembly. And you and I are placed in a particular assembly. And you know, I'm not saying you can't move. I certainly am one that couldn't say that because I did. But let's put it this way. If I moved, and if you moved to get away from a circumstance, you'll never get away from it. It'll be right in another form because God is working in your heart and mind all the time. For what purpose? According to Romans 8, that we might be conformed to the image of His Son. I don't always see it that way. You don't always see it that way. But the circumstances of your life are such, good, bad, indifferent, plus or minus or zero. Therefore, the purpose of making all things work together for good to the conformity of your heart and mind to God's beloved Son. Let's go on. Cave of Adullam. Now the next story in the 30th chapter of 1 Samuel. Pretty serious situation. 1 Samuel 30. 1 Samuel 30, verse 1. And it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south in Ziklag and smitten Ziklag and burned it with fire, and had taken the women captives that were therein, that they slew not any, neither great or small, but carried them away and went on their way. Well, why did they go to Ziklag? Well, if we turned in a chapter or so before, when David defected to the Philistines, the head of the Philistines had given him Ziklag. Now, I believe that there's a lesson here. Whatever we may get, if we've defected a bit from the truth, we're going to have to give it up and have it restored by God's grace and not because we got it from this weary world. Now, another thing. If David had followed the Philistines to Mount Gilboa, he would have been more to the north and the east. Ziklag is more to the south and the west. And so God in his providence kept David as far, not maybe as far as could be, but a great distance from Mount Gilboa, because there the anointed was slain. And God spared David that blemish in his life of having anything to do with having put a hand against the anointed. Beautiful how God works. God in secret thee shall keep. All the circumstances of your life and mine are so ordered so that we're kept and preserved and encouraged. Well, it says in the end of the sixth verse, David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. Do you and I, in the midst of the circumstances that we find ourselves in, and you say, brother, you don't know what I'm going through. You talk about God in secret. In secret, I'm going through a great deal. I respect that. I respect that. But David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. And there's a verse that says, it's in the eighth verse, thou shalt surely overtake them and without fail recover all. To think of how God delights to give us. He may not give us basket and store, but he can enrich us, like that verse says in 1 Corinthians. Enriched, not made rich, but enriched. And to think of how your life and mine have been enriched by what the Lord brings in connection with adversity. Now let us turn to the Gospel of Mark. And we have chosen, I trust not arbitrarily or randomly, but we've chosen four stories, incidences in the Lord's life where there was a need of his power and his inclination, his sympathy, when there was on the part of those that were to be recipients, there was some doubt in their mind concerning his willingness, his caring, or his power. Don't we see, if we didn't even look into the scriptures, which of course would be a loss, don't we see that in your experience and mine in life, we sometimes tacitly doubt his willingness or his care or his power? So let's look at it. The first chapter of Mark and the 40th verse. Mark, the first chapter and the 40th verse. There came a leper to him, beseeching him and kneeling down to him and saying unto him, if thou wilt, thou canst make me clean. There was no doubt in the leper's mind that the Lord was able. But was it his willingness at this time to exercise that power? Does the Lord rebuke him? Well, no. And Jesus, moved with compassion, put forth his hand and touched him and saith unto him, I will, be thou clean. The leper got exactly what he asked for, but he also got an expression from the master himself that he was willing to do. Do we cry out sometimes, why leave me in this circumstance? It doesn't seem that you're willing. Well, Joseph waited 2 full years. Let's go on to the next one, in the 4th chapter. And we have a little song we sing at Sunday school in connection with this story. A little ship was on the sea. It was a pretty sight. It sailed along so pleasantly and all was calm and bright. Doesn't really say that here, but that's the song. The 4th chapter of Mark and the 36th verse. And when they had sent away the multitude, they took him even as he was in the ship. And there were also with him other little ships, only mentioned in the Gospel of Mark. And there arose a great storm of wind, and the waves beat into the ship so that it was now full. And he was in the hinder part of the ship, asleep on a pillow. And they awake him and say to him, I hesitate on purpose, not to be dramatic, but because it's a little hard to think that those disciples so misunderstood the person of the Christ. They said, Master, carest thou not that we perish? There's a similarity between his willingness and his caring. But you know, there's a verse in Peter that says, he cares about you. And you know, it doesn't say that Peter was on board this ship, but we're assuming that he was. And you know, he may have been one of them that said, carest thou not that we perish? And so by inspiration, years later, he's given of God to say, cast in all your care upon him, for he cares about you. You know, there's little touches throughout the 1st and 2nd epistles of Peter that reflect certainly the guidance of the Spirit, but the guidance of the Spirit using a vessel that had learned through experience. And don't you and I learn through experience? Is there ever a doubt in our hearts of his willingness or of his caring? And he arose and rebuked the wind and said unto the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. In this case, this is probably the most severe rebuke that the Lord gives his own. That's not Matthew 23, where they're not his own. Scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites. But he doesn't say that to these. Why are ye so fearful? How is it that ye have no faith? And they feared exceedingly and said one to another, what manner of man is this that even the wind and the sea obey him? We can enter into it, can't we? We're in the little ship. We may be in one of the other little ships. And if we were, we knew that the storm abated and the sea was still, but we never would have known that the Lord is the one that said, peace be still. So I want to be, and you want to be, as close to the Lord in this, our wilderness experiences, as we possibly can be. Now, that ship wasn't big enough for all of us to get into it. But the ship that, as it were, of protection and care that the Lord has for us is big enough for every one of his own. And that's a beautiful little word in the 10th chapter when he leadeth forth all his own. He didn't want one of his Jewish sheep to be left behind. And he has provision. Certainly not a boat, but in the figure, he has a boat that's big enough for every one of us. And we don't need to worry about not being wanted, not being appreciated. He wants us to be as close to him as we want to be. And he said, why are you so fearful? Let's go on to the 3rd one, in the 9th chapter. Now, we could spend a great deal of time, but I have some other things on my heart, and I'm watching the clock. And so this one is more extensive. It's more involved. And I ask myself and I ask you the question, starting down with the 14th verse, the Lord has come down from the Mount of Transfiguration and there's a crowd. Let's get the picture. There's a crowd. There's the disciples. There's the Father. There's the Son. And there's the Lord Himself. What's the story? Well, let's set aside for a moment what the Father wants for His Son. And because I really believe that the exercise that was needed was not with the boy, because he was, we might say, out of it. But the Father was coherent. But let's find out what he had that was faulty. 22nd verse. And oft times it hath cast him into the fire and into the waters to destroy him. There we have to stop again. But if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Can't you just feel the pathos? His disciples hadn't been able, and he thought, they've been with Jesus. Why can't they do something? So he says to the Lord, if thou canst do anything, have compassion on us and help us. Now, I may not remember exactly, but I think that the Darby translation reads in the next verse this way. Jesus said unto him, the if thou canst is if thou canst believe. Now, I don't want to put words that the Lord didn't say, but just to help to understand it. It's the Lord really said, don't put the if thou canst on me. The if thou canst should be put on you as far as belief. Beautiful. Think of how the Lord dealt with that father. He's going to deliver the boy. That's not really the issue. The issue here is the working into effect in this father's heart and life, an understanding of the heart of the shepherd. Certainly not the shepherd in the Gospel of Mark, but of the Lord Himself. Now notice, in the 24th verse, and straightway the father of the child cried out and said with tears, Lord, I believe, help thou mine unbelief. Now there's a crowd, and they didn't seem to understand, and so they were coming closer, so the Lord delivers the boy. But the real work was with the Father. So now we've had three stories of Joseph, three stories of David, three stories of the blessed Lord in circumstances that maybe we can fit into, to glean something of the encouragement that the Lord would have us know that through endurance and encouragement of the Scriptures might have hope. And so this dear man, the leper, said, if thou wilt. The disciples said, if you care. And the father said, if thou canst. We need to be closer to the Lord, don't we? So that we understand His mind. And if there are circumstances that we don't understand, I know with all my heart, I trust, how easy it is for me to be able to say this, but much more difficult to prove. As for God, His way is perfect. Perfect. Now, with just a few minutes, let's turn to the second and third chapters of Revelation. And there in those two chapters, there are several parallel threads that go through these seven. I have no intention of bringing out the consecutive history of the church, which we believe, and I think rightly, is the teaching. But let's take them as examples in everyday life of a state of soul or of circumstances that we find ourselves in. So let's go hurriedly through them. What are the seven churches? Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamos, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, Laodicea. The first one, we may not bring out what you would like, and I may not bring out what I would like for the sake of time, but I believe there's something here because in each one of these, there's an opportunity for the believer to be an overcomer. An overcomer. And that's why I read that verse in 1 John. What is the victory that overcometh the world is our faith. And it used the word victory instead of overcoming. It doesn't use the word victory here, but I would like to take the liberty of saying that that's what it is. Now, what's the opposite of a victory? It's a defeat. Chagrin. Disappointment. But the Lord wants you and me, whether it's the story of Joseph, the story of David, the story of the blessed Lord, to see in these seven churches that there's an opportunity, whatever the state of soul, whatever the circumstances that we find ourselves in, that we can be, by His grace, an overcomer. An overcomer. Are we going to say, the speaker, or oh yes, I'm always an overcomer. Yes, I've stopped before we get started. It's not true. So the first one, the seventh verse. To him that overcometh will I give to eat of the tree of life, which is in the midst of the paradise of God. We recall that there was a tree of life in the garden, and they were taken out of the garden so that they wouldn't eat it. But now here is an opportunity for those in the Ephesian assembly that left their first love. We can overcome that by His grace. I'm not saying that we can be restored to apostolic power or grace, but we can in some measure be an overcomer and we can eat of the tree of life. Let's go on to the second one in the 11th verse, and that's Smyrna. He that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. There was persecution. Can we, in these favored lands, talk about persecution? The most that we've probably ever endured is maybe some neighbor won't have anything to do with us. I know of a couple that had an exercise. They moved to a new location, and they had, in their old location, a big Gospel of John that they put up at Christmas time. And they noted afterwards that the neighbors didn't have that much to do with them. Well, in a way, it's not that I think we shouldn't have to do with our neighbors because we want them to be saved, but that's a mercy. In a way, he that overcometh shall not be hurt of the second death. Oh, that's just think of the encouragement for whatever trial or difficulty to think of the second death we shall not be hurt of. Down in the 17th verse, to him that overcometh will I give to eat of the hidden manna. And will give him a white stone, and in the stone a new name written, which no man knoweth, saving he that receiveth it. Beautiful. Hidden manna. Hidden. God in secret thee shall keep. Let's go on. 26th verse. I haven't mentioned the assembly that they're a part of, which is an omission on my part. Thyatira. 26th verse, and he that overcometh and keepeth my works. Notice, it's the only time of the seven that something like this is added. And he that overcometh and keepeth my works unto the end, to him will I give power over the nations. See, there was an environment in Thyatira that had great works, but here it's my works. Will I give power over the nations? During the Dark Ages, Thyatira had power over the nations. But to think of the overcomer, we think sometimes, how can I be an overcomer with such circumstances surrounding me? But there is an example. Now on to the next chapter, 5th verse. He that overcometh, Sardis. Defiled garments. But he that overcometh, the same shall be clothed in white raiment. Isn't that beautiful? Is there an opportunity? Is there a chance? Is there a possibility? Is there an occasion to have white garments in the midst of a defiling world, a defiled Christendom? Not trying to say anything about dear saints of God. I have one right next door because we have a common wall. And in the other section of townhouses, dear Christian couple, I believe with all my heart that they have been overcomers. And they're going to have, even now, a sense of being in white garments. We've had them to our home. They've had us to theirs. And they've given testimony of white, undefiled garments. 12th verse. Him that overcometh, Philadelphia, maybe it's to overcome an attitude that we might think we've arrived. Just take this as a state of soul concerning which the Lord could say, thou hast a little strength and hast kept my word and not denied my name. I desire that individually. But you know, if I can't do that, at least I can respond to the knock and the voice of Laodicea. But here, and it's so rich, that 12th verse. But let's go on now to the 21st verse. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. Who are those that overcome in Laodicea? Maybe it's those in the 20th verse that have responded. And the Lord has come in and supped with them, and I will sup with you and you with me. To him that overcometh will I grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame and am set down with my Father in his throne. Laodicea, Laodicean tendencies and spirit, we can extricate ourselves from that. We can be restored from it if we just hear the knocking at the door and respond to the voice. And then he says we're going to be an overcomer. In conclusion, let's turn to 1 John, the 3rd chapter, and the 2nd verse. I believe, in summary, that what the circumstances that God puts us through in our lives, we can be an overcomer. We can, at the moment, be defeated. But it's all to bring us into conformity to His beloved Son. Now here is the divine and eternal consummation of that desire on the part of God. Beloved, now are we the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when He shall appear, we shall be like Him, for we shall see Him as He is. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of faith, it produces a moral change in our hearts and ways. And here is the blessed, eternal, divine consummation of all that God purposed in your life and mine, that when we see Him, we're going to be changed.